Somewhere deep below the earth, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. To reach George from west of the Rockies, dial 800-618-8255. From east of the Rockies, dial 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George by dialing area code 818-501-4721. International callers may reach George by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5. Then dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
And again, the first-time caller line is kaput tonight. It's just not working. So why don't you, if you're a first-time caller, try the wild card line. Here's that number again in case you were thinking of only the first-time caller line, 818-501-4109. We continue in a moment with Brian Fagan here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Brian Fagan, our guest. Brian, what do some of your colleagues say about your thoughts? I mean, could you call this your theories, or are you just, putting together things based on what other scientists believe?
It's a mixture. Basically, the sciences generally are very specialized these days. And I'm one of the few people in archaeology who you could describe as a generalist. And I tend to write books on very big issues, which are where I take a topic like, for example, the Little Ice Age, and I pull together very complicated literatures written by various people. I interview people, I talk to people, and from this I produce a synthesis, some of which is my original thinking, much of which is others. So it's a mixture of the two. And it's a very difficult sort of research. You have to do an enormous amount of reading.
I'm sure you do. Do you miss full-time archaeology?
Do I what?
Do you miss being a full-time archaeologist?
No. Years ago, when I was, it must be over 20 years ago now, I had to make a decision as to whether I was going to leave archaeology. I got tired of it, and I decided I was not as good an excavator as I should be. And I was going to give it up, and then I was persuaded by a very eminent archaeologist in England to start writing general archaeology, and it took off. And I got so busy that I had to make a decision as to whether I was going to give up digging permanently. And these days, there are so many archaeologists that it's ludicrous to think we can all dig. So I made a conscious decision to give up digging, and now write books about archaeology and enjoy it with involved with the communication of it. And I certainly, by retiring, haven't given up being an archaeologist. Quite the contrary, I'm actually doing more writing now than I used to. So I'm very active in the archaeological community.
Well, and your background has allowed you to, I think, do even a better job with these books than most, huh?
I hope so. I do my best. And as I get older and I've retired, I sort of branching out to all sorts of new things like the Little Ice Age and having great fun. I'm thoroughly enjoying myself because ultimately archaeology isn't about artifacts. It's not about discoveries. It's about people and how they behaved. And that's fascinating.
Let's go to our calls now. Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Good morning, George and Dr. Fagan.
Good morning.
Hi.
My name's Dan. I'm calling from Cody, Wyoming, and I want to tell you, Dr. Fagan, you're the reason I got into archaeology.
Oh, dear.
There you go. You touched another life, huh?
Oh, dear. Yes. I was walking through the bookstore, and I saw the cover to your book, The Great Journey, and I thought, hey, I'd like to do that.
Oh.
So I want to thank you very much.
Well, thank you, sir. A new edition of The Great Journey's just come out.
Oh, really?
Published, it's got an updating chapter published by the University of Florida Press.
Very good. Another life that you touched. Each to the Rockies. Welcome to Coast. You're on with the air with Brian Fagan.
Yes, sir. I'd let your guest set the dimensions, but how large would sea level canals through the Isthmus of Panama have to be to divert those currents or strengthen them to get the circulation around the Arctic Sea to diminish the number of 4 and 5 hurricanes?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I'm not an oceanographer. Sorry, I can't answer your question. I just outside my knowledge.
All right, Wildcard Line, you're on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hi, is that me, George?
It is, indeed.
Hi, this is Mike from Idaho. I noticed you have Dr. Nick Begich on tomorrow. I've read his book, Angels Don't Play This Harp.
Yes.
And my question is, can an ionospheric heater like the HARP project really change weather patterns?
Well, I'm not sure if he's, if you, Brian, can even answer that.
No, I can't answer that question. Call in again tomorrow and ask. You get the answer.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, right. appreciate that. You know, the study of weather, I mean, could you call yourself as versed now as a meteorologist?
Oh, God,
not?
No. No way. I'm an archaeologist and a historian. And I write about the impact of climate on people. I would be the last person to call myself a climatologist or meteorologist. I'm humbled by their science. It's very difficult and very challenging.
Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, yes. My question was...
And speak up if you would.
I'm sorry?
Speak up as loudly as you can.
He mentioned there was absolutely no effect that we have on the weather. And from listening to your show that I can't believe that it is even on the air. It's so wonderful. But I believe that we do have an effect on the weather from what I've heard from your shows. Mostly from the drilling and the toxins we produced by being an advanced society, for example, oil, and things we put in the ozone layer that creates an effect on our Earth. And I was just wondering what he had to say about that.
Mankind affects weather. What do you think?
Oh, yes, we do. We affect it by pumping pollutants into the atmosphere. We affect it by felling forests. I mean, there was a fascinating book produced a couple of years ago by a professor at Oxford on the history of deforestation. And the acreage of forests, which is cleared a year, is staggering. And the impacts of this on us are very severe. Our use of water is the same. We are profoundly affecting the environment and also the atmosphere. To what extent we're affecting the atmosphere is much debated, but we are. And what the long-term effects of this will be, we don't know. It is scary and a question very much for the next generation.
Do you think that governments are affecting weather by doing, we have heard chemtrails, I'm sure you've heard about that. Are they doing things in the atmosphere, Brian?
Not that I know of. I don't know much about governments in the atmosphere, but certainly government policy affects climate in the final analysis, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. Welcome to, we'll go west, first of all. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
This is west of the Rockies.
You got it. It's you.
Yeah, that's me. This is Richard from Anchorage, Alaska. Just to mention a small correction about our ice situation here. Our glaciers are just galloping. They're gone. I mean, just so to speak, gone. We have some of them that's going to be completely gone in 20 years. The Arctic Ocean, I worked on the Arctic Ocean for Prudhoe Bay. For 15 years, I'm 68 and retired, but the ice in the Arctic Ocean has now went from 9-foot average winter depth to a 6-foot average in 15 years. That's dramatic. I'll hang up and listen to you all.
No, it's interesting because, no, I was up in southeast Alaska last summer, and the retreats of the glaciers since I was up there in the 70s is truly spectacular. Yeah, the glaciers are retreating, and the ice is getting thinner. I am told there are some places in Alaska where the glaciers are advancing, but whether or not this is true, I don't know.
So if the glaciers do disappear, what's the significance for us?
Well, one of the most profound significances is the adjustments in the Earth's crust and rises in sea level caused by the melting of the ice. And if sea levels continue to rise, some South Pacific atolls will be flooded, and the damage could be, environmental damage could be huge. Let me give you a figure from history. The Netherlands, the Low Countries, much of them are below sea level, and in the 14th century, they had a storm surge at a time when sea levels were slightly higher than they are today, and 400,000 people died in one night.
400,000 in one night?
Just inundated thousands of square miles of land with no notice, and wiped out entire villages and thousands of head of cattle, and the effects, and the market, the casualty figure is a contemporary figure, but it certainly was thousands of people. So the effects that rising sea levels can have are considerable. And again, look at all the people living on the coast in Florida, living on the coast in the Gulf particularly, and living in the coast in Southern California. You get a major rise in sea level, we may have problems.
I'm back in Los Angeles on Monday, Brian, and all this is going to happen to us.
Enjoy L.A. I try and avoid going there.
Professors at UCLA are predicting a major earthquake in that region by September 5th. So
I was just over in at Pompeii in Italy, which, as you know, was destroyed by Mount Vesuvius.
Yes.
And the guide had heard a story that some Japanese scientists said there was going to be a major earthquake or major eruption of Vesuvius in November, and he was going on holiday to Sicily.
Just to get away.
Just to get away.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning, George.
Good morning.
Hello, Dr. Fagan. This is Dan again. I got cut off before I could ask you a question a couple minutes ago.
Yeah, your quality of your phone, Dan, is not very good. I'm not even sure you're going to make it through this one, but do the best you can.
How about that? I'll try talking louder.
No, that's not going to work.
I have a question,
but
Dr. Fagan, about the North settlements in Greenland.
Yep.
And why they disappeared after surviving for some 500 years.
This is a somewhat of a mystery, but the most likely hypothesis is that a rapid deterioration of climate after about 1250, 1300 caused them to die out, largely because they couldn't sustain themselves through the winters. It was due to climate change.
With what goes on, by as he was pointing out, those kinds of climate change and the dying off.
Yeah. What happens? Some people die. People don't arrive to refresh the settlement. It gets cut off from Iceland, for example. People try to go to Iceland by boat. Maybe they get there, and they simply abandon the settlement, and maybe no more young people don't come or are not born there, and eventually the settlement just dies out.
He's
but
to the Rockies.
Ultimate effect, consequence. It was ultimately the consequence of a colder environment.
Let's go east of the Rockies now. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi there. My name is Dulo. I'm from Shelbytown, Michigan.
Dulo, hi there.
I seem to think that I'm in a very, very safe place here in Michigan along the Lake Michigan shoreline. And my question is will these, like, big typhoons, hurricanes, stuff like that, affect something like Mount Rainier triggering a volcano?
No, I don't think so. I think it's long dormant, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And my one more question is, maybe George may know something on this. If, say, something like Mount Rainier does go off, Do you think the cloud from it would reach as far as Michigan, New York?
Depends on the prevailing winds, my friend. But certainly, if there was a big volcano, a volcanic eruption, there would be a huge effect. But where depends on prevailing winds and so on. Let me tell you a tale. In 1816, Mount Tambora in Southeast Asia literally lost the top 1,500 meters of its peak, which is about 3,000 feet, and injected into the atmosphere enormous quantities of fine dust, so much so that skies were obscured over Europe and New England, and 1817 was known as the year without a summer. And one of the people who was affected by it was a poet called Shelley, who was a famous British poet, Percy Bysshe Shelley. His wife, Mary, and he holidayed or went on a vacation by the Swiss lakes, and it was so cold they stayed inland telling stories. And one of the things she did as a result was write the story of Frankenstein.
That's absolutely true.
Isn't it fascinating?
Yeah, absolutely.
But no, these things do have an effect.
Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there. Hello?
We lost him.
Oh, well, that one is gone. Let's try another one. Phones, something's happening with sunspots, I guarantee it.
No, wild card it's me. Line.
Hello, wild card line. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Goodbye. Well, that's another one. We're 0-2. One more, and I'll just talk to you for the rest of the hour myself. West of the Rockies, go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
I can.
Oh, good. Finally. Dr. Fagan, my love of archaeology started with a great book back in the 50s that I think it was called Gods, Graves, and Scholars.
Ah, yes, the classic book.
And it really got me interested. I was living near Chandler, Arizona at the time, where there were a lot of Indian reservations and
yep.
archaeological digs going on. But one of the guests that they've had on this program quite a bit in the past was a gentleman by the name of Zachariah Sitchin, who talked about some ancient wars that occurred and were documented in some Sumerian texts that he apparently had a part in translating. And it sounded very much like they were describing an exchange of nuclear warheads with pillars of flame and flaming arrows flying through the sky, this sort of thing that wiped out one or both of these large metropolitan areas somewhere in, I guess, what is now Iraq. And I wondered whether you thought there was anything of substance to that.
No, to give you one word, no. It sounds to me like space fiction, but I am not familiar with the gentleman or his work. But certainly nothing in science would suggest that at all.
Sure. Well,
sorry.
One other question, if I might.
Yep.
The other question would be, if you couldn't describe whether there was any authenticity to the discussion about the seven ancient wonders of the world, like the Colossus of Rhodes
mm-hmm.
and some of the other items that are described there, whether they actually existed or not.
Oh, yes, there is. And there is a book called 70 Architectural Wonders of the World, published by a company called Thames and Hudson. It's authored by a guy called Chris Scarr, Scarre. And that book has got a lot of accounts of these different things in it.
You mentioned a little bit that the Little Ice Age, and by the way, what's your definition of that?
The Little Ice Age, as far as I'm concerned, is a period from about 1300 A.D. up to about A.D. 1860, when the climate of the world was cooler and much more volatile and changeable than it is today.
How did the Little Ice Age affect the Spanish Armada?
Ah, this is where we get into this business of tree rings and great accuracy of tree rings. And there was a remarkable British meteorologist, a historian, who spent his career, his name was Hubert Lamb, who spent his career tracing the climate. This was in the days before very accurate tree rings. And one of the things he did was establish that the Spanish Armada, when it passed through the channel and anchored off Belgium, the time when the British sent fire ships into it, was hit by a massive southwesterly gale, which basically blew the fleet and scattered it up over around the north of Scotland, where another gale hit it. And these two gales were thought to be the remnants or direct result of hurricanes in Florida, which, of course, at the time would not have been recorded.
All right, stay with us, Brian. We'll be right back with another final half hour of your phone calls as we talk about climate change and how they affect its civilizations. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com. Gateway to the West. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. To reach George from west of the Rockies, toll free, dial 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, toll free at 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George at area code 818-501-4721. And the wildcard line is open at area code 818-501-4109. International callers may reach George Norrie by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5, then dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
Well, let me tell you, our guest is Mr. Brian Fagan. And he's written in several books that we've talked about tonight. Tomorrow, my guest will be Nick Begich. Angels Don't Hear This, Play This Harp, and Earth Rising 2. We're going to talk about a number of issues, including some expectations and predictions for the future from Nick Begich. We'll be back in a moment. Brian, some of these climate changes, though, must come very fast. Have you heard of the mammoth that was uncovered in Siberia, frozen, and he still had food in his mouth?
Oh, yeah.
He was just starting to chomp. I mean, so what could have happened to have frozen that thing so
you're
quickly?
You're talking about just regulars. It went feeding in the summer. Quite a few of these have been found over the years. It went feeding in a swampy area, got enmired in the swamp and couldn't get out, and probably starved to death or froze to death when the winter came. It's quite a common phenomenon.
Well, but the way that they have described it, it was almost as if he was eating, froze to death almost immediately.
Is that possible?
Now explain that. How could that occur?
Well, you might have had a sudden frost. And he died of hypothermia. It's quite possible. He might have had a heart attack. There were so many things that could have killed him. He may have died of natural causes very suddenly. Without knowing a lot more, it's very difficult to say. But most of the ones in Siberia are animals that got bogged down and then perished where they stood because they couldn't extract, and their bodies then got frozen in the winter and then got in the permafrost and were permanently frozen.
Back to the phones.
Yeah.
Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello, Brian and George. How are you doing?
Welcome to you. We're fine.
I'm listening to you guys off of the XM radio, channel 165, the Ask channel.
You got that right.
All right. I've been trying to get in on the east of the Rockies line. I think y'all can't hear me there or something. I'm a truck driver. My question is this. There was a video released back in the early 90s or late 80s called Earth Changes. And I was wondering if Brian had ever heard of that video or seen it.
I'm sorry, I haven't, no.
It's very interesting. It deals with the Hopi Indians and some prophecies that they have had about very serious earth changes, climatic changes in the earth.
No, I know nothing about it, I'm afraid. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, take a look at it if you can find it.
I will, indeed. Yes, thank you.
All right, have
thanks.
A good night.
I appreciate your phone call. There is no question that Earth changes will continue. The question is for us, Brian, how bad can it get? I mean, how taxing can it be, for example, on our resources? Let's say we have oil shortages. How do people on the East Coast heat their homes? A lot of people still use fuel oil, for example.
Yeah, those are the sort of issues for the future because all these resources are finite. And we're going to have to find alternative ways for heating things and fueling things. And, of course, the search is going on. I don't know what the future lies there, but it's a serious problem.
Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hey.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I live in northern Minnesota, and it seems like in the wintertime there's less snowfall up here, and the summertime is becoming a little colder and worse weather. I was wondering, is it possible that the climate could level off and become a constant throughout the year, like winters with less snow and colder?
No, that will not happen because of the nature of the earth. One of the great beliefs of people who think that global warming caused by humans or global warming period is a good thing, is that the world is going to emerge into one of these periods where it's constantly warm all the time. That is not going to happen because climate's going to fluctuate all the time. And the seasons beyond, seasons in El Nino are the two most powerful factors in the world's climate.
Now, of the two, which causes the most heavy rain, El Nino or La Nina?
Oh, El Nino.
By far? What's the biggest rainfall recorded or ever discussed?
There you have me. You're talking rather in the meteorological things. My guess is it'll be somewhere like a Hawaiian island. You know, the volcanoes in Hawaii, somewhere like that. Some localized, very heavy rainfall somewhere. Probably one of your listeners knows the answer to that one.
All right, let's go to our wild card line. It's your turn. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hey, George. This is Steve from Austin, Texas.
Hi, Steve.
The proud home of Alex Jones and Infowars.com.
Yes, he is, and we're probably getting back on the show in the not-too-distant future again.
That would be wonderful. I have to preface a question to your guest. I have to set it up just a hair before I give him the question. Your guest tonight, before your guest came on, we're calling in talking about these flashes in the sky. NOVA put out a video called Hunt for the Super Twister, and they talked about Doppler radars and how they have one everywhere across the United States within 100 miles of each other. And all these Dopplers across the United States are always flashing on all, anytime you look at any kind of radar screen, whether it's the National Weather Channel or your local weather, you see all these circles coming up everywhere. And all those flashes, I've been studying the weather for quite some time now. I consider myself a natural scientist. The sky all the time looks like it's electrically agitated. Commercials on TV for the past 3 or 4 years, almost every national corporate-type commercial you see on the TV has these electrically agitated skies in the background, almost like it's some subliminal advertising to make you think these chemtrail-type skies. So what I'm saying is, all these Dopplers, every 100 miles across the United States, they're all hooked up on some sort of grid run by a supercomputer. And as each one fires and discharges, it creates this huge flash, like a lightning bolt or a meteor. It's a discharge, not unlike shuffling across carpet and touching a doorknob. And
you may be right. Something like that could be causing
it. Now, on this hunt, this Nova hunt for the Super Twister video, they said that they're trying to get Congress to fund to put these things in Oklahoma every 20 miles apart. And they say it's to read the weather, to read the weather. And I don't believe that. What I'm noticing is when I watch the radar here locally in Austin, and I see the skies outside being electrically agitated, and I know of at least six different sky-type patterns that happen. Those radars on the TV are being energized, and you can see them going. So what I'm saying is, this El Nino, La Nina, all this is kind of a cover for weather modification with these Doppler systems every 100 miles.
All right, Brian, your take. What do you think?
I have no idea. I just don't know.
Short and simple.
Sorry, it's not my field.
West of the Rockies, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hey, Brian. This is Brendan calling from Kenai, Alaska.
Hi, Brendan.
Hi. I wanted to get Brian's take on the theory that UFOs were involved with, like, the building of the pyramids in Egypt.
That's not his theory. He's not here to talk about that. Sorry. Wildcard line, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hi, this is David calling from Tampa. Great show. I want to ask Dr. Fagan, the Little Ice Age has received a lot of attention, but what hasn't received as much of attention is that it was preceded by what is called the medieval warming period, where the temperatures got just as warm or even warmer than they are now. And I was wondering, how could that have occurred when no one was burning fossil fuels back then? And does that cast any doubts on the idea that our burning of fossil fuels now is causing warming?
Interesting question. I'm glad you asked that, because the medieval warm period is a very important period because of the construction of Gothic cathedrals and so on. It's a very formative period in European history. The answer to your question is nobody knows. Undoubtedly, the temperatures were as warm as they are today, if not warmer. And the issue, of course, is to what extent is this due to natural phenomena, and to what extent has the promiscuous burning of fossil fuels done it? And the answer is we don't really know. We may be in a period of natural warming. We may not. But this doesn't mean that we mustn't look very carefully at things like fossil fuel burning to try and reduce them. It's probably just, in both cases, I think the natural cycle is there, and then in our case, probably fossil fuels have exacerbated it.
A little more than a year ago.
An articulate answer there.
A little more than a year ago, Brian, in Buffalo, New York, they had, I think it was like an 8-foot snowfall. Can you imagine that?
Ooh, that's a lot, isn't it?
Well, it's heavy also. Mm-hmm. In what would happen then in a potential fast ice age? Would you continue to get that kind of snowfall, and it would just continue to accumulate?
Actually, interesting enough, a lot of ice ages are pretty dry. You would get snow accumulations of considerable amount, but a lot of the time it would just be very cold and very windy and very cloudy and very dry. You get very powerful winds blowing off the ice caps. So not necessarily.
West of the Rockies, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there. This is Olin in Culver City, California.
Sure, Olin. Go ahead.
Yes. I'd like to know if the Little Ice Age was accompanied by volcanoes, earthquakes, or an alignment of the planets.
I can't answer for the alignment of the planets, which happen all the time. There were earthquakes, ditto. I can't really tell you much. But there certainly were substantial volcanic eruptions, particularly in Southeast Asia and in Iceland in the 18th century. There were well-documented ones. There is thought to have been a really major one in the 6th century A.D., in Southeast Asia, which caused considerable climatic disruption and colder temperatures, particularly in Europe. Yeah, quite a lot.
I wanted to read you this fast blast that I just got in, Brian. It says the heaviest rainfall ever recorded in a 24-hour period, 74 inches in March 1952 on an island in the Indian Ocean. Can you imagine that?
72 inches. That's an incredible sheet of water.
You know, we just got a couple days ago an inch and a half hail, and it dawned on me how mankind would be turned upside down if regular rain also always had hail about that size. It would shut down civilization, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. I mean, I wonder what would happen if we had rain once a week here year-round. This place would be totally different.
Let's go to our wild card line. It's your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello. I wanted to ask a simple question. I don't quite understand how man can evolve. I think the longest-lived man or the fossils of man from long ago was out of Africa or Asia. But then we talk about the Ice Age and how I don't quite understand how the two, they seem to conflict.
Okay. The first humans evolved in Africa about 2.5 million years ago, the first modern humans about 150,000 to 200,000 years ago. The Ice Age began about 1.5 million years ago. So humans evolved before the Ice Age began. And one of the most remarkable things about the development of humanity is the way we've learned how to adapt to extremes of climate by inventing fire, by developing weapons, and so on. So the reason we survived is because we're so adaptable and able to develop new technologies.
Okay, I'd like to ask you one question. With that analogy, would you say that man evolved out of, let's say, Africa, and man migrated into Asia, and now the European is the most recent of mankind?
The latest that people know from mainly genetics is that Africa was indeed the cradle of humankind, not only of the very first humans, but also of modern humans. Modern humans, the first humans spread out of Africa about 1.8 million years ago into Asia, as you rightly pointed out. The first humans spread into Europe, they're rather uncertain about that, probably about 600,000 to 800,000 years ago. Modern humans spread out of Africa 100,000 years ago. They were in Asia probably by 75,000. They were in Western Europe by 30,000 to 35,000 years ago.
About what you do, Brian, what fascinates you the most?
Studying people and their behavior.
Ancient or current?
Ancient. And, of course, its relevance to modern. We haven't changed much, you know. We behave the same way as we always have. What's changed is the society around us.
No, you're right about that. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Good evening, George.
Yeah, hi.
My name is Ron McAllister. I'm listening from Brownsburg, Indiana on WIBC 1070.
Indeed. Good to have you with us, Ron.
It's a pleasure. I was wondering, about 3 weeks ago, I saw a program on Link TV, and they were interviewing people from some of the atolls that, that we had done the nuclear testing on. There are people living there now.
Yes.
They were saying that they're having a problem with higher seas. A lot of their crops inland are being devastated by seawater.
Yep.
And they're losing enormous sections of their beaches and their atolls. I was wondering if, they've said that they've had meetings with U.S. and Great Britain in regards to, the global warming and pollution. And I was wondering if I could get your opinion on it. And I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
All right. Go ahead.
Basically, what's happening here is global warming. And as there is melting of ice sheets in northern latitudes, so sea levels are rising. As there are increasing storminess, which there is in some parts of the world, the same thing happens as damage. And the places that are at the greatest risk from rising sea levels and global warming are low-lying Pacific atolls, like the ones where they interviewed these people. And this is something which is hopefully socially responsible citizens, not of the United States, but of the world, that we do not ignore. And something is going to have to happen, because some of these atolls, if sea levels go on rising, will eventually vanish.
I'll tell you one thing, Brian. When you look at all these climate changes and what they've done to civilizations, you realize how immense, how big, how powerful this planet really is, don't you?
Oh, yes. We are but minnows in its huge existence, and we are completely at the mercy of the climate.
Thank you so much. Brian, thanks for being on the program. Good luck with the new book, The Long Summer.
Thank you so much, and it's been a pleasure, and have a nice night.
For Karis Coburn, Dan Galanti, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Barbara Simpson, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition, and don't forget, very special Friday night open lines in a couple days. Be safe, everyone.